We'll hear argument this morning in case 09337, Krupski versus Costa Crociere, SPA. Mr. Bender.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. This case revolves around Rule 15C1C of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. In pertinent part, if two subsections are satisfied, the rule permits relation back of an amendment adding a new defendant after expiration of the limitations period. The courts below found, and respondent does not question, that we satisfied the first subsection, notice and no prejudice. That arose from the service of the original complaint upon Costa Cruz, the agent and corporate affiliate represented by the same attorney as respondent Costa Crociere.
Do you know, Mr. Bender, what exactly the corporate relationship was between the two?
No, Your Honor. Not the corporate relation. The functional relationship is described in the affidavit is that Costa Cruz is the booking agent for Costa Crociere, and for the notice procedure, according to the affidavit of Mr. Klutz, Costa Cruz engaged the IRSI adjustment service to resolve claims arising on the ship. So in that respect, it was also, in our view, an agent of Costa Crociere, but the specific corporate relationship is not known.
Thank you.
Because of that timely service on Costa Cruz, we satisfied the first subsection. And as this court noted in Chavon, timely service on one defendant may serve to give imputed notice to a related defendant, which is what we have here.
Counsel, your client tripped over the cable, right?
Correct.
What if the case were there were two people behind her and she was pushed, and she didn't know which one pushed her, Jones or Smith? So she sues Jones, and Smith knows all about it because, of course, he's a key witness or whatever. And can he be substituted later on because he was the person she should have sued?
If you're talking about a lack of knowledge of the real name, probably.
Not just the real name. It's not that Jones pushed her, but his real name is Johnson. It's that Jones, whoever pushed her, I forget, but one guy, one of the people pushed her, and she named that person, she named the other person. She made a mistake about who pushed her. Can you have substitution in that case?
I would say yes, because, again, assuming that all of the other criteria are satisfied.
Yeah, the non-pusher has notice, yep, and everything else, right. But there's no relationship between the two of them?
It's obviously a slightly different and more difficult case from our perspective. But what I think is critical is the status that's involved. In this particular case, the suit was filed against the vessel operator. And that vessel operator was identified as Costa Cruz, when we know that the actual identity was Costa Crociere.
When was your first notice of that? I mean, it was on the first page of the ticket, but the answer came after the statute of limitations.
Correct.
Was that your first notice, that there was this different entity, or did you know that earlier?
It was, we say that was the first notice. Now, the circuit court used an imputed knowledge rationale to suggest that the inclusion of the name Costa Crociere within the definition section gave us what I would call constructive notice. But in terms of actual knowledge that we had sued the wrong party, it was the answer which was filed after.
Well, I didn't understand you to deny that the ticket made it very clear who operated the ship.
I'm not sure.
Do you contest that?
I contest that it makes it very clear, but I don't contest that one could conclude that that provided constructive notice that, if read carefully, one might infer.
Well, why not? Don't you read the contract carefully before you bring a lawsuit?
Well, actually, it was under definitions, and according to the definitions, Costa Crociere fell within the same definition of carrier as the steward, the ship itself,
You either are contesting or you're not contesting that it's clear from the ticket. I had assumed it was clear from the ticket.
And that I am not agreeing that it's clear. I am agreeing that it provides constructive notice from which one might infer that. Not clear, but discernible.
So you had, so then you had notice even before the suit was filed. It was on the ticket.
We had what the circuit court referred to as imputed knowledge.
Did the name show up any place other than page one of the general conditions of passage?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
This is what, an 11-page, very small print?
It's an 11-page, small print document. And one thing that bears mention is that reference is under the designation definitions, because respondent makes some hay out of the fact that we complied with other requirements, which are under a different heading, which says limitations of liability. But what we also had was that we purchased the ticket from Costa Cruz. It was sent by Costa Cruz. We had the pre-suit notice sent to Costa Cruz, responded by the gentleman under the heading Costa that says claims administrator for Costa Cruz. So there was certainly what I would call conflicting information at best about which was the name of the actual vessel operator.
Not if you read the definitions on page one. And if you're not going to read all 11 pages before you file suit, I would think you would at least read page one. And that seems to me it made it clear.
Well, under the same definition, the steward would be a carrier every bit as much as Costa Cocchiera S.P.A. So it seems to me by that reasoning, you could conclude that the steward or the janitor is the vessel operator because they are likewise defined as the carrier in that definitional section. And in fact, it also includes the vessel itself within the definition. So let's assume that my client had, instead of suing Costa Cruz, sued Costa Magica, the name of the vessel itself. Most of the cases would say that an amendment like that to add the actual name, once you have identified the status of the defendant you seek to sue, falls within the subsection 2, which is addressed primarily to the constructive notice of the defendant, that they knew or should have known that they would have been brought in the suit, but for a mistake concerning the proper party's identity. The general focus of that second subsection, I think, is to look to whether this defendant knew or should have known that it was the intended target.
I've been thinking about the Chief Justice's question. Where the two people are pushed and you don't know which person, or two people fire the shotgun and there's only one pellet, you don't know which gun the pellet came from. In that case, I think we could stipulate that even by reasonable inquiry, you wouldn't know. In your case, I think the difference in the cases is that reasonable inquiry means you should have known. So now we have a rule that excuses something you should have known, but doesn't excuse something you couldn't have known, which seems odd. And because it's odd, therefore, maybe that's why it only applies to clerical errors.
Well, actually, when it talks of mistake, it seems to me that the very notion of mistake connotes error. I looked at a couple of definitions, dictionary definitions. Merriam-Webster's defines a mistake as, quote, a wrong judgment, or, quote, a wrong action or statement proceeding from faulty judgment, inadequate knowledge, or inattention. So at least in that colloquial sense, the very nature of mistake implies some measure of blameworthiness. And indeed, it's hard to conceive of a mistake that couldn't be avoided. And I think that's the problem with looking to the ticket. Because what the definition on the ticket essentially says is, with due diligence, you might have avoided the mistake. But in my view, and I think in the view of the language of the rule, that doesn't change the very nature of it as being a mistake.
Counsel, sir. Assume I accept your argument. And I am the cruise operator, or the cruise owner, cruise ship owner. And I look at the complaint and I say, I think they really meant me. But I think now within the 4M period, which is the period in which I'm supposed to reasonably know that I would have been named absent the mistake, here an answer is filed. And you're told there's a mistake, and you don't correct the mistake. What conclusion would a reasonable person at that second juncture make about whether you made a mistake or not?
I think
that's what the issue is here, which is assuming the complaint could be read as a mistake during the 4M period. Wasn't that mistake corrected and you refused or failed to act?
Let me respond both legally and factually. Legally, I submit that it doesn't make a difference because under the text of the rule, if during that 4M period they had the knowledge that you're suggesting, and which would be suggested by the respondent when they say, I think, if you had filed the amended complaint and served it a month after the answer, it would have been timely. We would have done it. That acknowledges that there was a mistake. And once there is a mistake, if during that 120-day period they knew or should have known that it would have been brought against them but for the mistake, that knowledge doesn't evaporate by later events. As long as there is knowledge during that period.
That makes so little sense to me. Here, I think, and for the following reason, you seriously, I don't think, could contend that if you had sought to amend a year later, that would have been timely, correct?
Correct.
All right, but putting aside prejudice,
okay.
What the lower court said was because your delay speaks to a choice, that's the only thing a reasonable defendant would have assumed. That having been told that you sued the wrong party and you continued in that action, that's what you intended to do, to sue that wrong party.
Let me point out factually, and I did not stress it in my brief, the answer was filed on February 25th. 23 days later, on March 20th, the court entered a scheduling order which said you have until the end of June to amend your complaint to add parties. So it seems to me that a defendant faced with a court order that says the time for amendment extends till the end of June would not be drawing any conclusions that the plaintiff's state of mind had changed. And one difficulty with trying to look at different points during the 120-day period is that it seems to me you'd have a constantly moving target. If you say that we satisfied 120M at one point in time, but somehow that's not enough, and at a later point in time, maybe they didn't know it anymore. And then perhaps, I guess, in theory, you could have them again, if we had sent them a letter even after that and said, you know, we really did mean it, and then for some reason they concluded otherwise, you'd have a constantly moving target.
Mr. Benger, would you explain one factual matter to me? I might have gotten this wrong, but I thought the answer was filed after the 1 year
had
run.
It had.
So when the answer was filed, it was too late for you to come within the statute of limitations.
Absolutely.
And I
correct.
Thought that would be the answer that you would give to Justice Sotomayor, because when you got the answer, which was filed after how many days?
It was filed, I think, 24 days after the complaint.
You had gotten that a few days earlier. You could have amended, and then we wouldn't be here.
That's certainly true, Your Honor. And I think it also—
I'm sorry. You have 120 days to amend, don't you, from the filing of the complaint?
No, Your Honor. The 120 days is the time frame for the notice to the defendant.
Right.
120 days after the amended complaint is our time for service of the amended complaint on the new defendant. But I think that the point that is raised by Justice Ginsburg is this. Once we find out and the limitation period has already expired, school's out. If we tried to amend immediately thereafter, if we hadn't made a mistake, we couldn't amend 1 day after expiration of the limitation period. So, if we had acted immediately, we still don't get relation back unless we've satisfied the two criteria of the subsections. But if we do satisfy those, within the 120-day period, then we fall in the safe haven provided by the rule, whether the amendment itself occurs 1 week, 3 weeks, or 7 weeks afterwards.
But the basic point is the answer didn't come in until you were already out under the statute of limitations.
Correct.
So from that point of view, nothing else matters. You were out when they filed their answer, and you could do nothing to cure that.
We could do nothing to, as a matter of right, file within the limitation period.
Did your amended complaint contain any new and material allegations other than the name correction?
It actually was a second count, but it was the same allegations against Costa Crociera that had been made against Costa Cruz. We did not amend the theories of liability. And again, getting back to the question of status and theories, I think that's the critical distinction between this case and the cases they rely upon, the Yerushalayim and things like that, where you're changing from an individual defendant to an institutional defendant or vice versa on a different theory. And of course, you couldn't mistake an individual for an institution. And that, I think, is the line of demarcation that we're asking the court to draw, and it explains why, in the lower courts, the decisions which present our paradigm all, or virtually all, allow relation back, whereas those that seek to amend to change from an individual to a corporation or vice versa often don't permit relation back.
I thought that the only condition was that it had to arise out of the same event or transaction, which would give you much more running room than you assert.
Only if you're amending against the same defendant. If you're adding a new defendant, you have to satisfy sub I and sub II, which look to the notice and reason to know of the new defendant.
Mr. Bender, in addition to the mailing of the ticket, you said the mailing of the ticket came, is at Costa Cruz. Were there any other connections between the plaintiff passenger and Costa Cruz beyond the ticket coming in an envelope that says Costa Cruz?
There was the pre-suit claims notice, which was sent to Costa Cruz at the Florida address, in attempted compliance with the provision of the ticket, which says you must file notice to the carrier before filing suit. And you have to do that within 185 days. So we not only got the ticket from Costa Cruz, we bought it from Costa Cruz. The ticket itself, if you look at, I think it's 25A of the appendix to the petition for certiorari, there's a prominent page which says Costa Cruz, Cruise Company, next to a picture of the vessel. So we have that. Then when we file the notice, we send it to Costa Cruz. We get a letter back from a person who claims to be in a position to resolve the liability of the vessel owner, signed by him as claims administrator for Costa Cruz. Those are the things. And then we have, prior to the commencement of suit, the internet investigation about which Florida company is registered to do business in the state of Michigan, and we look at the Costa Cruz website, which says Costa Cruciera with several offices in several countries, United States office, Costa Cruz, Florida. So those are some of the things which give rise to
Mr. Bendor, can I come back to your, I'm not sure why it matters, but it seems to me you're giving too narrow an interpretation, and I would not like our opinion to read any more narrowly than the statute allows. It seems to me that if you assert a different claim arising out of the same transaction, you would be able to amend. If you will look at C1C, which is what you're asserting here, right? C1C says, the amendment changes the party or the naming of party is against whom a claim is asserted. If Rule 15C1B is satisfied, then you go back to 1B and it says the amendment asserts a claim or defense that arose out of the conduct, transaction, or occurrence set out. It doesn't say there has to be the same claim.
There's no question we satisfy that. Everybody agrees.
I understand that. That's why I don't understand why you're arguing a more narrow interpretation.
Because
it seems to be your home free with B.
Unfortunately, C then goes on and says, and if within the period provided, sub I and sub II. So,
oh, yeah, but those are the only things we have to argue about. There's
that's
no
correct.
Doubt that you are asserting, even if you're asserting a different claim, it certainly arose out of the same transaction or event, didn't it?
Certainly, no okay. question. If the court doesn't have any additional questions at this time, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Glaser?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. There are, we suggest, two issues before the court. The first is the legal question of whether a plaintiff's knowledge about the identity of the proper party can preclude a finding that there was a mistake concerning the identity of the proper party. That, we suggest, is in some ways the easier issue because there's abundant authority from the circuit courts of appeal and from this court in Nelson versus Adams USA, where the court said the rule requires a mistake. In that case, there was no mistake.
Mr. No Mason. Mistake if you happen to know it, if you happen to know who the right party is?
Correct.
Ever?
Yes.
Have you ever driven a car where your wife has said, turn left, and you've turned right? Has that ever happened to you?
Yes.
Was there anything you didn't know?
What the facts are here, Your Honor.
Yeah, no, I'm asking about this question. My hypothetical.
You know.
Okay. Was there anything you didn't know?
There is nothing that you did.
Correct. Know. Did you do it by mistake? Yes. Of course you did. That's happened to every human being. There are millions of instances in which people do things by mistake. We're in
I
fact.
I think your wife facts. Made a mistake. I don't think. Made a mistake.
No, my wife does not make mistakes.
I think.
I make mistakes, and sometimes I make mistakes knowing all the facts, and so do you, and so does everybody else. So I never heard of this thing that you can't make a mistake knowing all the facts. But anyway, here we have a person who didn't know all the facts. What the judge says is he should have known all the facts. Where record does it say he did know all the facts?
Where in three different times the plaintiff was informed of the facts. So let me say on the drive.
That's a different matter. Well, my wife told me to turn left and I turned right. Okay? Well, but I didn't take it in.
Well,
so that's a different matter. Where does it say he did know the facts as opposed to he should have known the facts?
The circuit court talks about imputed knowledge. We disavow that. There was no need for imputed knowledge in this case. One imputes knowledge to someone who does not have knowledge. Courts and lawyers make that up. You don't have knowledge. But
I just want the citations to the page. I wasn't challenging you. I just wanted the citations.
There
to the
are
page where there's a finding that, in fact, he knew that this company called Costa Cruz in Italian is the same as the company called Costa Cruz in English. I take it Crocieri means Cruz.
They're separate okay. corporations.
Yeah, yeah. One is called Costa Cruz in Italian, and one is called Costa Cruz in English. And I just want to know where it says in the record that the client or he, the lawyer, actually knew that he should have sued the one that spells its name in Italian.
They're separate corporations. There's nothing
in the
record
that says.
I didn't ask
that question. I'm asking for a record citation as to where there is a finding that this particular plaintiff knew that the Italian company called Costa Cruz was in fact the one he should have sued.
There is
I'll write
a
them
finding.
Down and look at them later.
The finding on page 19A of the district court opinion says
19A
of the cert petition says her failure to timely name Costa Crocieri SPA as a defendant.
I thought what the district court did was impute the knowledge.
No. No. The district court did not impute knowledge, and this is an important point. The circuit court imputed knowledge.
Where does it say that? Where does it say that on 19A?
19A, it's not precisely it, but it says her failure to timely name Costa Crocieri as a defendant was not the result of a mistake. It does not specifically say.
Well, I know. I would say in reading this that both courts have made the most elementary mistake of the English language in thinking that when a person doesn't know something but should have known it, that that's inconsistent with a mistake. That's the very definition of a mistake.
Your Honor, this
now, all I want is some citation from you that shows that isn't what they thought?
Well, the best I can do is the conclusion that there is not a mistake, but I need
but
to...
that's the conclusion. And when I read two sentences down, it said that they may have had constructive knowledge. The word constructive to me, when I hear, I want to run out the door, because what the word constructive to me means is not knowledge. Oh,
I'm not following that.
I'm on page 19.
Yeah, but he's talking about constructive notice
or constructive
by the defendant, not constructive knowledge, but by the...
Right. Well, then where is the page that it says that the plaintiff had actual as opposed to imputed knowledge?
There is not that sentence in the opinion. What there is the plaintiff made a conscious choice. The facts of the case are, first of all, before the lawsuit is filed, the plaintiff has the ticket. There is no doubt whatsoever that the plaintiff or her attorney read.
Is there any other than that one page on the ticket that against the mailing envelopes that she got that say Costa Cruz? Is there anything in the entire record other than that definition page that includes carrier, that includes steward, anything else that tips her off that this is a different corporation?
There are three different pieces of evidence. The first is the ticket. The ticket defines carrier as Costa Crociere. It is the only entity stated by name.
It doesn't include stewards. What do you say to that?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
It includes the stewards on the boat, according to your friend.
It lists one entity by name, Costa Crociere, and it lists others by role. Now, there may be some dispute over whether
Costa Cruz be perceived to hold one of those roles.
Well, one might argue that there might be a number of different entities that might be a carrier, but there's only one entity which is clearly carrier, indisputedly.
What is the relationship between those corporations?
Costa Crociere is, I believe, one level removed, an owner of Costa Cruise Lines. Costa Crociere operates around the world. They have different companies that operate as sales and marketing agents in different
regions. But are they sister corporations, the parent sub? Or?
Costa Crociere is parent, and I believe there's a corporation below them, and then that corporation owns Costa Cruise Lines.
It's below them. I mean, it owns all the shares in its subsidiary company?
Yes.
You know, the definition of carrier includes independent contractors. I mean, other than that they're more closely related, I can see someone thinking, well, Costa Cruise is at least an independent contractor with which Costa Crociere does business.
There might be more than one carrier, but there is one carrier identified by name. It is the first it is the first person listed. Costa Crociere is the carrier. I suggest that if one reads the first page of the ticket, one might have questions about whether there might be some other entities that are carriers, but there is simply no doubt that Costa Crociere is the carrier.
If you went to the website, which was mentioned, for Costa Cruise, there would be a tab that says our ships, and one of those ships is Costa Magica, whatever.
Yes.
Our ships, and it identifies Costa Cruise as the cruise operator. That's the information that's given to passengers in the United States who are going to book on these ships. It says Costa Cruise, our ships, Costa Cruise is the operator. That's what was being put forth to the public.
What the relationship between the parties was governed by the ticket. The ticket says, for example, the claim against the carrier has to be filed within the Southern District of Florida. This claim was filed in Southern District of Florida, but they did not sue the carrier as identified in the ticket. And the question is, was there a mistake concerning the identity of the proper party?
So it shouldn't matter that this confusion was caused in large part by this entity that advertises in English under the name Costa Cruise and identifies Costa Cruise as the operator. The largest European cruise operator is how Costa Cruise is identified in the advertising.
We believe that the ticket is clear and that governs. But even if one would disagree with that, then we move forward. If there were any confusion, there's an answer filed. Costa Cruise Lines is sued. Costa Cruise Lines denies that it could be held liable, says it wasn't the carrier.
The answer is filed conveniently after the one-year period has run.
The answer is filed, but the question of whether the defendant knew or should have known that it would have been sued but for a mistake, the inquiry there is not within the limitations period. It was until the 1991 amendment, which followed the Schiavone case.
Well, but there's some sharp practice going on here. Paragraph 10 of their complaint sues Costa Cruise Lines because saying they owned, operated, managed, supervised, and controlled the ocean-going passenger vessel. And it's the same lawyer for Costa Cruise as for Costa Crociere, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that lawyer looks at this and says, aha, they made a mistake. They named the cruise line rather than the name in Italian. So I'm going to wait until the statute of limitations runs, and then a couple days after, I'm going to say, aha.
The statute of limitations is not the measuring period. It was before the 1991 amendment. Now, what happened here is the answer is filed, which makes clear defendant Costa Cruise Lines denies it was involved with the ownership, operation, or management. That's Joint Appendix 30.
Did the answer say the statute, the one-year period has run? Was that raised as a defense in the answer?
It was not raised in the defense. It was not raised as a defense in the answer. It was not.
Was it raised as a defense?
It was raised 10 weeks later in a motion for summary judgment, which was still within the Rule 4M period. And that is the crucial period. If, upon reading the answer, which says
the Rule 4M period concerns when you can serve. It doesn't say that the statute of limitations is any more than what was the term of the passage. It was 1 year.
Well, the Rule 4M period is awfully important because Rule 15C turns on, since 1991, on the Rule 4M period. If during the Rule 4M service period, it became clear to Costa Crociere that it was an intended defendant, that it would have been sued but for a mistake, then the complaint against Costa Crociere would relate back, even though it was not timely filed.
Now, that assumes when 1C2 knew or should have known, it says within the period provided by Rule 4M. Now, in the early part of that period, at one point in the period, you should have known. At another point, because the answer was filed, you shouldn't have known. And you're relying on the fact that they filed an answer, that you filed an answer which made it very clear to them what the situation was. But was there any point? And all it takes, I think, is any point within that 4M period when you knew or should have known.
The answer we submit is no. When they filed the complaint indicated a couple of things. First of all, they were suing Costa Cruise Lines, but the complaint made clear that they had read the ticket. They specifically relied on the venue provision of the ticket. So we knew that they had read the ticket, which clearly identifies Costa Crociere as being the carrier.
Where is the defense? I mean, the ticket says suit must be filed within 1 year of the date of any alleged injury. And where is that defense stated? You said it comes up 10 weeks.
In the motion for summary judgment, which is not in the joint appendix, it's docket entry 19. The affidavit, which is was filed with the motion for summary judgment, is in the joint appendix at joint appendix 33. And the motion, the answer made clear that Costa Crociere is the carrier which could be liable, not Costa Cruise Lines.
Yes, but
there was no change.
Being realistic about it, as I understand it, you're relying entirely on the general conditions of passage in the ticket, the fine print describing the term carrier. That's but do you take into account that the cover of the ticket, which is what the passenger would look at, uses Costa Cruises as blah, 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 Costa Cruise Lines, and so, and doesn't even mention the carrier? Don't you think, looking at that ticket, if you were a passenger, you would think you were doing business with Costa Cruise?
Well, Your Honor,
just looking at the cover.
If am I
correct that on the cover of the ticket, the Italian name isn't used at all?
On the cover, the Italian name is not used. The ticketing agent's name
is
Costa Cruise Lines.
And isn't that what the passenger would normally look at to understand who he's doing business with?
If one were to not read the ticket, which on the page...
Assuming the lawyer would just look at the cover before he files a lawsuit?
We know. I mean, if this were a question of uncertainty whether the lawyer read the ticket, that would be one thing. But we know that the lawyer read the ticket.
Well, I don't understand what the lawyer reading the ticket has to do with this question.
Because the question is whether the lawyer made a mistake. Isn't that the question?
No.
Well, and he did make a mistake.
The principle is if one knows what the true facts are, if one knows what the true facts are and proceeds in any event, then there's no mistake concerning the
identity.
That
isn't true. Is in the English language, it's not true. I mean, that's why I was giving you some examples. I don't know. Maybe there's some special legal language somewhere written in Blackstone, or maybe it's Lord Cook. I don't know. That says when you use the word mistake, don't use it in English. You use it in Italian. But, I mean, if we're going to use it in English, it's not hard to find instances where a person would know, but he'd still make a mistake.
Well,
and it's even a fortiori.
Your Honor.
If he doesn't know, even if he should.
Isn't
that true?
What we have up front is the ticket. If we move past that, it's sort of a test case. All right, did this plaintiff really not?
Or what possible reason is there that somebody who's hurt on a ship and has a lawyer and she has a broken leg and she'd like to get recovery would deliberately sue the wrong person?
The plaintiff.
Is there such a reason?
The evidence in the record is that the plaintiff's lawyer looked at the website and chose United States Corporation.
And I understand, did he do it by mistake? If you were representing this person, would you want to sue the company that could give you some money if they're liable? Or would you rather sue the Bank of America that has nothing to do with it?
Well, if I had to sue Costa Crocieri through the Hague Convention in Genoa, maybe a lawyer would do that.
I want to ask you about that, because in your brief, you refer in your footnote, on page 6, to requirements of the federal government, 44101, 44103. So I looked those up. I discovered that 44103 says that it is a requirement, and you say you follow these requirements, that you shall establish under regulations of the FMC financial responsibility. And those regulations tell you that, at least as best I could read them, that you must furnish a written designation of a person in the United States as a legal agent for service of process. And they are referring to instances in which somebody on a ship suffered an accident. So since you say that you're complying with that, I would like to know the name and address of that person in the United States for whom you must send legal process, because if obviously that had been on the ticket, that is precisely the man to whom this plaintiff would have sent the notice.
I cannot answer the question now.
Well, then were you correct when you said in your brief that this company, which you represent, does comply with 44103?
My understanding is the answer yes, but I cannot address the specific question. I simply
It is relevant, I think, because it adds to the confusion if they are under a legal requirement to have a service, an agent for to receive service, and then they not only don't do it, but they don't have it printed on the ticket, and they get everybody mixed up by having the same name in English or a very similar one and announcing someone you're supposed to serve, and then it turns out to be not that person you're supposed to serve. It's a mysterious person that you can't find.
But the question
that seems odd. I'd like to know what the explanation is of this.
Well, the question is not a more generalized blame explanation, but under the rule, the language of the rule, whether Costa Crocieri knew or should have known that the action would have been brought against it, but for a mistake concerning the proper party's identity. And the most problematic case, part of the case for the plaintiff, is why, when they were told in the answer they had not sued the proper party, that Costa Cruise Lines was not the carrier, was not the operator, but Costa Crociere is. Why did the plaintiff not do anything?
But, let's clarify that point. Now, I'm looking at 3A, which is the Court of Appeals opinion, and it says that Costa Crociere moved to dismiss, arguing that it had been sued after the one-year ticket period allowed for claims set forth in the ticket. Then the rule tells us that you have this much time to serve, and then the complaint will the amendment will relate back to the date of the original filing. It doesn't change your statement, your defense. The one-year statute of limitations isn't affected. What is affected is the complaint will relate back if there's an amendment filed. But the one-year statute of limitations remains, and you didn't file your answer till that time had run.
If during the 120-day period, you know, the rule 15C happens to rely upon the measuring point, but service is not the crucial point. Within that 120-day period, if the plaintiff had done anything at all to indicate that she had not sued Costa Crociere because of a mistake, then the complaint would have related back a very easy case.
Yes, but the relation back is different from the point at which the statute is run. The statute runs after 1 year. Then, if she does what the rules say, it can relate back to the date of the original filing. The fact remains that you didn't file your answer till after the limitation period had run.
Yes, we did not file the answer. They filed the lawsuit on the eve.
Why does that even matter? I'm not really sure I'm following this argument. Let's say that the answer was filed during the limitations period, and the plaintiff's lawyer is a solo practitioner, and he or she is out of the office because the lawyer's on a cruise and doesn't come back for 2 weeks. And by that time, the limitations period has run. It's still a mistake.
And if...
Where do you see in... The question on which cert was granted has to do with imputed knowledge. Where do you see in the text of this rule anything that picks up the concept of either imputed knowledge or actual knowledge? It just talks about a mistake.
We do not rely at all upon imputed knowledge. The court granted review, but we don't think there is imputed knowledge.
Where in the rule is there anything that relates to the reasonableness of the mistake? What if it is the most foolish, negligent mistake you can possibly imagine? Is it not still a mistake?
The rule contemplates by its structure that the mistake will be the cause of the reason why the plaintiff did not sue the party.
That's not what the rule says. The rule doesn't talk about what kind of mistake or why. The rule says what the defendant should have known. And so when you read this complaint, it's very clear you know you're the carrier.
Yes.
You know Cruz, the other line, the sales agent, can't be the carrier, correct? So it's either a factual or a legal mistake. There's no other way to read that other than there is a mistake.
And then?
Because you have to answer Justice Breyer's question, which is, what conceivable reason that is not either negligence or unintentional or inadvertent or just plain stupidity, however you want to define it, that someone who's injured would want to name a party who wasn't responsible for the
injury? The most powerful evidence is simply when they were informed of the claimed mistake, they did nothing for 95 days to indicate in any manner whatsoever that it was a mistake.
Well, that's evidence from which the absence of a mistake might be inferred. I agree with that, but that doesn't establish that it wasn't a mistake.
Well, I mean, this whether something is a mistake ultimately is a factual issue. There's a legal question of whether a plaintiff's knowledge of the identity of the proper party can preclude a finding of mistake. But once we get past that...
But, counsel, what you're really talking about is whether once the answer was filed, they were dilatory in making their motion. I don't understand how you can argue that the day you received this complaint, you didn't understand that some sort of mistake had been made. The day that the answer came in, you might start to have a doubt because of their delay in the motion to amend. But doesn't that go to a 15A question, whether the judge should have given leave to amend because of dilatory tactics? Isn't that a 15A question, not a 15C question?
Well, delay in moving to amend can be a 15A, but 15C requires the judge to determine whether it was a mistake. And here, in essence, we have a test case. Well, the plaintiff is claiming that the reason why she did not sue Costa Crocieri.
Is there anything in the face of the complaint that would suggest anything but a mistake? I'm being very specific. On the face of the complaint, if what you read that.
Yes, I believe there is. The complaint specifically makes clear that the plaintiff's lawyer read the ticket.
Where does it say that? Where does it say, I know that the carrier is Costa Crocieri? Where does it say
that? The complaint certainly does not say that.
What the complaint says is that Costa Cruz, the operator of the vessel, injured me, correct?
It says that the...
And is that an accurate statement of fact?
It's not an accurate statement of fact.
So no, I would have said the previous paragraph 9 says the plaintiff has complied with all the pre-suit requirements of the passenger ticket. So you know they read the ticket.
Right, and the paragraph before, venue is proper in Broward County as the defendant's passenger ticket contains a forum selection. So we know when Costa Cruise Lines or Costa Crocieri learns of this, we know that the plaintiff
which
decided...
Is it? Is that a Freudian slip?
No, because we're not
just a mistake.
No, we are not disputing the notice issue. What is clear is they have read the ticket, and
despite that, they have decided
to sue Costa Cruise Lines.
They made a mistake, right? They read the ticket, and despite that, they made a mistake.
No.
What?
We don't think so.
Why is
but again,
it,
if we move
the
past
cover it.
Like I object to your relying upon the answer as establishing compliance with C little 2, because C in the prologue says is satisfied if within the period provided by Rule 4M, and there is at least some point within that period before the answer was filed, and if within that period, before the answer, you knew or should have known that it was a mistake, it seems to me you lose. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but there's nothing in...
And the only thing you could rely on for that short period before the answer is filed is simply the ticket,
but
right?
There's nothing in the rule, the ticket and the complaint, there's nothing in the rule that says that only events up to the point of the running of the limitations period or the service of the answer are relevant. It is throughout the within the
Well, you're period. Reading within the period to mean throughout the period. It doesn't say throughout the period. It says if within the period.
Well, the district court, which is serving as the fact finder there, looked at all the evidence, and powerful evidence is the service of the answer, which identifies the
Well, I think it's an important issue with respect to the statute, and I don't think we can treat cavalierly whether within the period means throughout the period. And that's one of the issues here.
I have one question about the face of the ticket, the one with a picture on it. Is it Costa Cruz or Costa Crocieri that got this big award for best four?
I don't know the answer to that.
Pardon me?
I don't know the answer. It says Costa Cruz is as
the make the assumption that it's the cruise line, Crocieri, that got the award, so the ticket itself confuses the two companies. Is that a mistake, incidentally? If I'm right, is that a mistake?
Your Honor, clearly, as you said, Costa Crocieri is the vessel operator. The ticket makes it clear on the next page, the very next page, the first
how
page.
How many, if you have a 1,000-page ticket, how many pages do you have to read?
Here, you only have to read one.
But this is the first one.
Well, this is
one I pointed out to you with the mistake. That's the first one.
It's sort of the cover. The ticketing agent here, Costa Cruz Lines, adds the cover. The first page of the provisions say Costa Crociere is the vessel operator. But again, if one looks at answer, there's no response. No response, and then a motion for summary judgment. Still, nothing. If the plaintiff had merely said in an email or a phone call, hey, I made a mistake, then it would be clear, an easy case. But they did not act despite being informed in the answer, that the identity of the proper party, and in the motion for summary judgment. The trial court, serving as the trier of fact here on this issue, had to make that decision. Maybe court would another judge
I'm still
rule
puzzled wanted because the Rule C just requires is describes the state of mind of the defendant, correct? C 1 and 2, isn't that right?
Correct.
And
yes,
is it not true that under 1 the defendant did receive such notice of the action it would not be prejudiced? That's
yes.
Clear, isn't it? And is it also true that at the time they received the complaint, they knew or should have known that the action would have been brought against the carrier instead of the broker?
The answer—
I don't understand how you get around the plain language.
Our answer is no, and especially considering and the events later
don't think
show
that
the
you don't think that the agent didn't realize that they would have sued the carrier if they had known the identity of the right party?
What is known is that they had the ticket. They still decided
I
to sue Costa
all
Cruise
that.
Lines.
But we're talking about the mindset of the defendant. And to say you think that they would have sued the broker instead of the carrier?
Well,
it's absurd.
The events later on demonstrated that even after the plaintiff was informed of the identity of the proper party, they continued to pursue the claim against the ticketing agent.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bender, you have 9 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Obviously, from the questions, the court has a good grasp of the facts and the issues and our arguments. I'd just like to clarify a couple factual points. The district court ruling didn't rely on the ticket at all. What the district court said was, I adopt the legal premise that if you knew before the running of the statute of limitations but didn't sue, that would not be a mistake. And here, says the district court judge, they filed their answer after the statute of limitations, and that's why you lose under a rule that requires that notice before the statute of limitations expires. That was the district court rationale. The circuit court was the one who relied upon the imputed knowledge notion that is now, I think, disavowed by respondent himself. With regard to the—
This is sort of an equitable rule, isn't it, this mistake? We're going to, equity takes account of such things. It seems to me very reasonable to say if the mistake is egregious, it doesn't apply.
I think now one gets into a wonderful process of trying to identify mistakes on a scale of egregiousness. And like, how many points of egregiousness would it take? And I think that's beyond the statute or the court rule itself, which just uses the plain language mistake.
I would have thought your answer would have been this has nothing to do with equity at all. It's just the interpretation of a legal rule.
Certainly. And the rule itself, I understood Justice Scalia's point to be that the interpretation of the rule is designed to be liberal in its application to avoid the forfeiture of potentially meritorious causes of action over technical mistakes which have nothing to do with the merits. And I thought that was the sense in which you used the word equitable. The other point I'd like to make, even though it's, in my view, legally insignificant, is their argument regarding the nature of the delay. Their motion for summary judgment was filed on May 6th. 2 days later, the court erroneously dismissed the lawsuit for a period of approximately a month. It was then reinstated on June 5th, and our response, which sought relation back, was filed on June 13th. So in addition to the scheduling order, there is a one-month period of time in which the case was erroneously dismissed. So if it were significant, we could say there's not significant delay, but the ultimate point is it's legally beside the point.
If the court has no further questions.
Slightly tangential, but is there a reason to suggest the Federal Maritime Commission look into this? Because I read the regs. I don't understand quite what's going on, because it seems to me they have a rule that's designed to prevent this situation. Is that true, what I'm suggesting, or not? You know the area better.
I don't know. I'm not a maritime lawyer, Your Honor. But I think certainly if the court's opinion were to note it, the Maritime Commission might well take a hint from the opinion and look into it.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, the case is submitted.